proceed with what you're leading me to. It's such a...
Welcome to Wednesday. This is church night. I guess it'll be the third hour mostly will be church night, right? And if you're a new listener, I'll explain it all to you then. This hour, this entire evening, as a matter of fact, is sponsored by Tim McCauley. He writes, Mike, I want to sponsor the night. I have nothing profound to say. I'm a dedicated listener. I love the show. You guys have made a major impact in the formation of my political and religious views. I can't thank you enough. I hope this sponsorship helps you keep it lit. Thanks for all that you do, Tim. Well, that's very kind, Tim. Thanks. Appreciate the 3-hour sponsorship. I don't like to talk about the pig man anymore because he is so filthy and so degenerate. But he's been coming out of his vermin-infested radio studio with some really weird stuff. He went on a long rant yesterday about contraception and abortions and women. And according to, is this Crooks and Liars? I think it is. He was reacting to recent developments surrounding birth control. And which included Komen's funding cut for Planned Parenthood and yada, yada, yada. Limbaugh got his rather large bloomers in a huge sticky wad about the hype around the issue. He said, quote, why is contraception so important that it must be paid for by somebody else? He demanded to know. Oh, I guess the pig man doesn't have insurance, right? Oh, well. He asked why contraceptives are, quote, a must-have, end quote, in comparison, say, to toothpaste or hotel rooms or a car. And then he wondered, quote, why are so many people afraid of birth, end quote. What? This pig bastard has had 4 marriages and produced no living offspring? I mean, you can say amen and thank God to that for sure, but do you suppose that he forces his temporary wives to use birth control? Or do you think he just is impotent? Or do you think his wives are just a beard? He only uses them as a front for the secret life he's afraid to reveal, do you think? I mean, it could be anything, couldn't it? Limbaugh then asked why the Democratic Party would want to limit pregnancies. Now, this is the reason I'm talking about this son of a bitch, because he has millions of listeners who eat this stuff up like a stray dog eats garbage. I mean, people eat this up. He said the Democratic Party makes money from abortions. He alleged that Planned Parenthood is part of a money laundering operation for the Democratic Party. And then he asked why Democrats seem to, his word, fear pregnancy, claiming that they treat it like, his word, a disease. And then he said, could it be the Democrats fear kids? I mean, they're aborting their own people. The vast majority of people having abortions are Democrat voters. This guy is so goddamn out of his crawl space. All this from an OxyContin addict. God only knows what he's taking now. He's blown up like a balloon again, so it's not OxyContin. This is from a slob who gets caught with Viagra and no prescription for Viagra on a return flight from the Dominican Republic, where there is a child sex trade that rivals Thailand's. Yeah, him! 4 marriages and no kids? You filthy, filthy man. It's just astonishing what conservatives, what Republicans in this country consider to be their spokesman. An OxyContin addict who sends his housekeeper out to buy illegal street drugs, OxyContin, who then, when he is caught, pays off everybody in the state of Florida so he doesn't have to go to prison like your average thug. He goes into rehab. Pet the donkey. What was it he petted, Gabby? Pet the pony. It was a pony. Yeah, he went to a rehab and he came out and he said, listen, you know, petting the pony was really, really therapeutic.
I'll never forget this if I live to be 100. He spent 3 hours of his show talking about how wonderful it was to go to rehab and how everybody should do it. And I kept thinking, so you're wishing that everybody in America should have a nasty OxyContin addiction.
Oh, God. Limbaugh sends his maid, his housekeeper, to score drugs. What's he had? 4 marriages. No kids. And he's railing about birth control? That Democrats make money on abortion? You filthy, hate-filled slug. When the lights go out, he's mine. I got this from TVNewsLies.org. You remember Liz Trotta? She used to work for NBC until they got rid of her because she became so extreme. She now works for Fox, of course. Here's the setup. The Pentagon, and this is via TVNewsLies.org. Remember, I told you I get their thing in the morning, a summary of news stories that you may want to click on the links and go, oh, my God. But from Think Progress originally, the Pentagon announced the new rules last week, easing the ban on women serving in combat. Think about that for a while. Conservatives like Rick Santorum are a little uneasy with that news. But the announcement only formalizes military practices that were already taking place. Okay? But Fox News contributor Liz Trotta took the issue to a whole new level. She's not only concerned about the so-called controversy, something that she sees as a controversy, surrounding this announcement, but for Trotta, the issue is having, quote, women once more, the feminist, going, wanting to be warriors and victims at the same time. Unquote. She cited a recent Pentagon report that violent sex crimes in the military have increased over the last 6 years, and she said women should expect to be raped. Women should expect to be raped. And then, in the same breath, she rips levels of bureaucracy that are there to support women who have been, in her words, raped too much. Raped too much? Oh, my God. To his credit, the host of that program, Eric Shawn, tried to talk Trotta down a bit. He said, quote, you certainly want the people fighting the war to be protected from anything that could be illegal, end quote. But Trotta wouldn't have any of that. She said, nice try, Eric. This whole question of women in the military has not been aired properly, and it's a great sleeping giant. Trotta complained about government supporting women who have been, quote, raped too much, end quote. A statement that seems to imply that there's an acceptable amount of rape that one can or should endure in order to prevent more layers of bureaucracy from swooping in to help out, right? This Liz Trotta is another person who is so goddamn crazy, she belongs right where she is in this nest of insanity that is the Rupert Murdoch Terror Broadcast Organization.
Condescending tribes making money selling lies. You might say, everybody hates my guts.
It's his guts.
I'm a
racist, homophobic, fat, pathetic cuts.
I'm a Nazi.
He's a Nazi.
That's right.
I really am,
because I'm a Nazi.
He's a Nazi.
That's right.
You're being scammed.
I'm a Nazi.
He's a Nazi.
Care about the middle class,
because I'm a fat conservative butthead with a face of a horse's ass.
He's a fat conservative butthead.
Hey,
with a face of a horse's ass.
I have a subhuman figure, a huge rear end. My brain? That's another story.
It's quite another story.
I have a face the size of a wash tub, and my ass is as big as Missouri. Yes!
This bastard is sick. He's a fat mom is big, and his ass is as big as Missouri.
Yes.
It's very clear.
As he mentioned yet tonight,
how much he hates these people? What's the matter? You got some equipment screw ups again? Ooh, witchy woman. 21 past, almost 22 past the hour. Good question from Mary Sanchez, the Kansas City Star. She writes, memo to the Republican Party, white supremacists no longer announce themselves by marching hooded and torching crosses. That's very true. Last week, Republican officials were told that a former leader of a group preaching the genetic superiority of white people would appear on a panel at the CPAC convention in Washington. A lot of people were, what? A lot of the Republicans, who's that? But that's because very few know the name of American Renaissance. But if you research American Renaissance through, and the research is available through the Institute for Research and Education on Human Rights, the guy, Robert Vander Voort, was once a leader of the Chicagoland Friends of American Renaissance. In a statement released Sunday to the Star, the Kansas City Star, Vander Voort called the accusations, quote, smears and, quote, exaggerations, saying, quote, I have never been a member of any group that has advocated hate or violence. Not that the Republican hierarchy who put together this circle jerk, bothered to ask. But writing in, or on Saturday, I should say, Vander Voort sat alongside Kansas Secretary of State Chris Kobach for a CPAC immigration panel. Republican U.S. Representative David Rivera of Florida was also present. No one questioned the alleged associations. Vander Voort represented pro-English, which opposes multiculturalism and bilingualism. Yeah, we don't want to speak nothing but just regular old American. Jared Taylor is another one who founded, he's the one who founded American Renaissance in 1990. Writing in 2001, this freak proclaimed immigration the greatest threat to whites today. he was concerned that 100 million non-whites are living in his country. I don't know. You know, reasonable people can express differing views about immigration or crime or class issues, the Kansas City Star says, entwined with race without spewing eugenics ideology. But what these people are talking about is different, and it's dangerous, and it's so Republican. Have you noticed what's happened to the Republican Party? It really has degenerated into a swill of Christian craziness, right-wing xenophobia, this murderous capitalist fascism. I mean, every freak in America has gravitated towards these people now. You won't find anybody rational or reasonable or logical voting in Republican primaries or voting for any of these candidates. As a matter of fact, poll after poll is showing that the, you know, average rank-and-file Republican wishes there was somebody else. I mean, look who you've got up there. Oh, my God. But this is the Tea Party. This is the year of the Tea Party. This is what these people are about. This is the kind of vomit they have tossed up on the public political stage. Rick Santorum. Newt Gingrich. And this poor, miserable bastard, Mitt Romney, who is just running like he's got Satan chasing him to get away from his own moderate past. I've never seen anything like Mitt Romney. And he's going to lose Michigan, and I will just stand up and cheer. Not that I really give a damn about any of this stuff. I just find it so weirdly fascinating. It's just bizarre. Here's a guy from Michigan. Dad used to be governor. But Romney, Romney, wasn't he the one that said, let the auto industry die? And now he's in Michigan looking for votes? Oh, yeah, that's going to happen. But the white supremacists who populated the CPAC convention like so many bleeding pustules believe America is doomed because of Asians, Hispanics, and African Americans. Oh, my God. Yeah. And you want Hispanics or African Americans or Asians to vote for you? Colonel Sanders, meet the chickens. Oh my God, this is just—I don't know. I don't know how to get my mind around this. This is just so bizarre. We'll be right back.
Revolution starts right now. Here's Mike Malloy.
Twenty-five before the hour. This hour is being sponsored by Tim McCauley. He's a dedicated listener. He loves the show. And he thanks us for all that we do. Thank you, Tim. What else we got? Anything? Ready to go home? There's something called the Heartland Institute. Heartland Institute. This is a secret corporate-funded astroturf organization, and they have a plan to teach children that climate change is a hoax. Now, this is from thinkprogress.org, and I got this one via tvnewslines.org also. See, tvnewslines.org, you can go there and you'll get all kinds of stuff. Same way with opednews.com. These are two of my favorite sites. They have everything. Internal documents acquired by Think Progress Green reveal that the Heartland Institute, a right-wing organization funded by the Koch brothers, Microsoft, what? And other top corporations, is planning to develop what is referred to as a global warming curriculum for elementary school children that presents climate science as, quote, a major scientific controversy, end quote. This effort is costing $100,000 a year and will be developed by Dr. David Wojcik, a coal industry consultant. Heartland's confidential 2012 fundraising document says
quote, principals and teachers are heavily biased toward the alarmist perspective. You know that there is global warming? The alarmist perspective. Now, this group, the Heartland Institute, believes that Mr. David Wojciech's project has, quote, potential for great success because he has contacts at virtually all the national organizations involved in producing, certifying, and promoting scientific curricula. End quote. The document explains that Wojciech will produce modules that promote the conspiratory claim that climate change is controversial. You know, like evolution. This is what the Heartland Institute says in their documents. Dr. Wojciech proposes to begin work on modules for grades 10, 11, and 12 on climate change. And one of the features that will be whether humans are changing the climate is a major scientific controversy. They also will develop climate models. Models are used to explore various hypotheses about how climate works. Their reliability is controversial. And air pollution. Whether CO2 is a pollutant is controversial. It is the global food supply and natural emissions are... It is the global food supply and natural emissions are 20 times higher than human emissions. Continuing with the Heartland Institute's internal document, Wojciech would produce modules for grades 7, 8, and 9 on environmental impact. Environmental impact is often difficult to determine. For example, there's a major controversy over whether or not humans are changing the weather. For grade 6 on water resources and weather systems, and so on. Now that's from the internal documents. Wojciech will receive $5,000 per module, with 20 modules produced a year. Now, Wojciech manages the climate change debate listserv. He's not a climate scientist. His doctorate is in epistemology. The Heartland Institute also runs the non-governmental international panel on climate change, a conspiracy theorist parody of the Nobel Prize-winning UN Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. James Taylor, a senior fellow at the Heartland Institute, told Think Progress Green in an email why the group is developing its denier curriculum. Quote, "We are concerned that schools are teaching climate change issues in a manner that is not consistent with sound science." How many times have you heard those two words, sound science? It's almost like you can't hear one without the other. "In a manner that is not consistent with sound science, and that is designed to lead students to the erroneous belief that humans are causing a global warming crisis. We hope that our efforts will restore sound science to climate change education and discourage the political propaganda that too often passes as education." Oh, my God. Yes, Kathy.
Now, I just wondered if this had anything to do with that same group of people who was influencing scholastic books to write, you know, like, oil is wonderful. Coal and oil, you know, how the glories of the, for the little
they're
kids.
They're all interconnected,
school,
yeah. Yeah, they're all connected.
The propaganda about, I mean, it just reminds me of Duck and Cover. You know, you could survive a nuclear blast. Just get under your desk.
That's right.
Just, oil and coal are good for you.
They are. The Heartland Institute. Don't you want to just pull your eyeballs out sometimes when you realize how organizations like this have totally, they've taken English words and turn the words into whores. No offense to sex workers, of course, but turn them into whore bots, you know, that just wander around screwing people out of their common sense. I mean, have you noticed that?
Orwellian. I'm sick of using the word Orwellian, Kathy. It's just so overworked. Of course it's Orwellian. But it's almost beyond that, you know? I mean, we need, I like the word whorebot, you know? That's a good word. There's a hyphen in it. And again, no offense to legitimate sex workers who struggle. Although I think you're probably doing that for reasons that are other than glorious, but I reserve, you know. Tom in Minneapolis sent a quickie, I think it was last night, night before. He says, religion is weaponized psychological warfare against average people, afraid of death, by unscrupulous operators such as priests, rabbis, and imams. It's the oldest fraud in the world to control and dominate and to separate people from their money. Religion has been used to wage and justify wars. Whether polytheistic or monotheistic, religion serves the interests of the ruling classes exclusively. Well, that's well put. And very succinct. 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 What else do we have? You ready to go to war with Iran? I guess you've been following everything, right? Huh? The Iranians have been striking back at the Israelis in three different countries. Iranian operatives have blown things up. Innocent people are dying, much like when the United States sends drone aircraft or when the Israelis invade the occupied territories. Innocent people die. When terrorist bombs go off in Israel, innocent people die. When the perpetrators of these crimes ought to be dragged before international courts of justice and severely punished, maybe in an Old Testament way, you know, gouge their eyes out so they can no longer see their sins. But the ludicrousness and the hypocrisy, let me just a leap of faith here. Of the five Iranian scientists and engineers who have been murdered, assassinated, I would be willing to bet that most, or if not all of them, were offed by either a U.S. or an Israeli operative operation inside Iran. Iran is not Iraq. Iran is not Somalia. If we keep poking sticks in the eyes of the Iranians, and I'm not talking about the people, I'm talking about their crazed leadership, the mullahs, and this poor bastard Ahmadinejad. If we keep poking them with a stick, we're going to have some really severe problems. Gareth Porter, who is an investigative journalist and historian specializing in U.S. national security policy, and he wrote the piece, A Dangerous Game on Iran. But he said today, there are clearly drumbeats for war in U.S. media coverage of Iran, largely fueled by the Israeli propaganda blast suggesting an array of Iranian assassination attempts with no discernible factual basis. The indications are that there will be a new round of negotiations with Iran relatively soon. What's being ignored is the fact that Iran was ready to negotiate with the United States on a fuel swap deal that would reduce its stock of enriched uranium and indicated it would cease its enrichment to 20% if the Western countries assured it of a supply of fuel for its Tehran research reactor. The U.S. should probably take advantage of that offer. You're going to end up smoking crack on your back, face the back. You're going to end up hooked on smack and then you're going to die. And then you're going to die. You might have to go to war, shoot a gun, kill a nun.
A soothing bedtime lullaby. It's Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour. The entire night is being sponsored by Tim McCauley. All 3 hours. Thanks, Tim. In his message, which he said is optional if we want to mention it on the air or not, but he says, I have nothing profound to say, and very few of us do, Tim, really. He said, I'm a dedicated listener. I love the show. Thanks for all that you do. And thanks to you, Tim, for sponsoring 3 hours. We do appreciate it. Mohammed Sahimi is a professor at the University of Southern California. He's the lead political columnist for the website PBS Frontline Tehran Bureau. He said today, quote, the attempts to assassinate Israeli diplomats are presumably a blowback by Iran against Israel's covert war against Iran. Israel has been the culprit behind the assassination of Iranian nuclear scientists, has supported Iranian terrorist groups to carry out terrorist operations in Iran, and it is suspected of having a hand in several explosions in important Iranian military and civilian facilities. At the same time, the Israel lobby in the United States has been the primary force for imposing tougher sanctions on Iran. So it's just a given that we're getting closer and closer and closer to a situation in the Middle East that can only escalate out of control. I mean, we really are looking at a horrific situation. And it is being driven by the Israeli government, the Likudniks, with an awful lot of help from the what is perceived to be the arrogance of the Iranian government. And the only response to that is to say, look, the United States, the Western powers, have been screwing with Iran like forever. Let's just keep it in current terms, though, in recent terms, since we overthrew their government in 1953 or 54. Just overthrew it. Just said, no, you're not going to have that leadership. No. Oh, no. We want your oil. And we installed a dictator. Now think to yourself, please, just take a moment. Supposing someone from outside the country would have come here and overthrown the government of Dwight Eisenhower. Well, that's impossible. Overthrown the government of FDR and installed a dictator. And then immediately this foreign power went to work setting up a torture organization. And they called it, let me think, I know, the CIA. When we set it up in Iran, we called it the Savak. Now, what do you think would happen in this country? What happened in Iran is they put up with it for 25 years. And then finally, when the Shah was sick, the revolution occurred. What would have happened in this country? And now the Iranians, for the past 25 years, have decided, okay, our two biggest enemies, three, four, France, Britain, United States, and Israel are all nuclear powers. We're surrounded. We have Russia to the north. We have Pakistan to the east. We have Israel to the west. We have India to the south. They're all nuclear powers. We are being heavily threatened. They've already overthrown our government a couple of times. What do we do? Well, sadly, in this day and age, what you do, if you don't want people to continue to mess with you, you develop nukes, right? What a shame. What a sad reality. But trying to provoke Iran, and it's obvious that the leadership is easily provocable. Wouldn't we be, if we had the history that Iran has from some foreign power coming in here, destabilizing us, overthrowing our government? And now every single move that the United States has made in the past 2 years has been absolutely provocative against Iran. trying to cut off their trading partners, freezing their assets, embargoing this, embargoing that. Don't forget, 5 years ago, Halliburton was still doing business, or Kellogg Brown & Root, or, you know, one of Dick Cheney's companies were still doing business there. There's no reason for this. There's no reason for this at all. But in this instance, U.S. foreign policy is being driven to the edge of a cliff by the Israel lobby in this country. It is happening, whether you like it or not, whether you like the terminology or not, is immaterial. It doesn't matter. It is Israel that is driving U.S. foreign policy in this instance. So what are we going to do about it? You know what we're going to do about it. We're going to do nothing about it. Nothing. Absolutely nothing. Until finally, either our president or our legislative branch decides that it's time. It'll probably be in coordination with the Mossad in Israel that decides it's time. And then there will be incidents, really bad incidents occur, way beyond the assassination of engineers and scientists. There will be a bombing run inside Iran. When that happens, the game's over. That's it. That's it. So if you have any influence, or think you do, just meditative or political or whatever it is, start focusing on not attacking or participating in an attack by Israel on Iran. We'll be back after the break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
I'm a salesman.
The
It is 7 past the hour. This hour is being sponsored, as the last one was, by Tim McCauley. Thank you, Tim. And third hour tonight, that will be the next hour, we're going to get heavy into church. It is Wednesday night. But right now, let's pause for a moment and receive tonight's wisdom from Prairie 2, Bruce Enberg. You can find him at prairie2.com and at tvnewslies.org. Subject line is squawk, squawk. The most powerful man on the planet dropped in to visit the people in Iowa who helped launch his climb to power. No, I don't mean President Obama. I mean Vice President Xi Jinping of China. In a year, he will ascend to the presidency, or as he's known in China, comrade chairman of Communist Party Central Committee. Despite a heavy diplomatic schedule, comrade Xi insisted on stopping to visit the farm family in Iowa that put him up in their spare room for two nights way back in 1985. He was a minor party official then from a remote agricultural province, and he was seeking to improve pork production in China. Well, he succeeded, and next year he will begin overseeing a five-year plan that will leapfrog the People's Republic of China past the United States as the dominant world economic power. But to emphasize his roots in agriculture, the soon-to-be chairman had a new purchasing agreement for $15 billion worth of soybeans signed by his trade reps while he was visiting Iowa. China now buys every fourth row of soybeans grown in the United States. These massive purchases amount to little more than a rounding error in China's trade surplus with the U.S. They use a lot of the extra cash to buy up copper mines and such around the world. Those U.S. dollars end up in the cash reserves of third world countries, and so far those third world countries haven't figured out that they traded their copper mine for a handful of magic beans, not soybeans. Known as an economic reformer throughout his career, Mr. Xi is also known as being very conservative on government issues. The Obama administration was careful to show him all the pomp worthy of a world leader. The Bush administration didn't show this level of respect for his predecessor when his predecessor made the same tour just before his ascension to power. But another 10 years of Reaganomics has made China into our biggest banker, and you have to be courteous to the guy who can call in your loan. The truth is that China doesn't really have that much power over us. That is, they wouldn't if our country was run by people who worked for us instead of working for the transnational corporations controlled by a handful of billionaire capitalists. We don't really borrow money from China, you see. No U.S. government checks are payable in Chinese renminbi. We borrow U.S. dollars from Chinese bankers that have them piling up there because of our insane trade, manufacturing, corporate tax, and financial services policies. The damage done to our economy far exceeds the few trillion that end up in China. You see, basically, the Republicans were burned down the chicken house just so they can steal the one chicken that runs out. President Obama spent his day at a factory in Milwaukee that brought its manufacturing back from China. His speech suggested ending tax breaks for companies that outsource, and he called for tax credits for companies that come back. Not that the big companies pay any taxes in the U.S. to begin with, so tax breaks don't really mean that much. But in China, in fact, they pay a lot of taxes. Mr. Xi sees to it. No mention from Obama of reinstating the tariff rates that we had from 1790 until the Republicans started dismantling our manufacturing base. Oh, look, here comes another flaming chicken. Try to grab it on the way by so we can eat today. PrairieNumeralTune.com. P.S. No actual chickens were harmed in the writing of this rant. Yeah, the did you watch some of the video of the soon-to-be Chinese chairman? Scary dude. Very scary dude. Just totally expressionless. Nothing there. Kind of like, who's like that? Like Gingrich. Just no expression. You know, Gingrich could look at you and just say, I'm about to take a knife and sever your jugular, and you're going to have your life force pumped onto the ground, and Callista and I will stand here trying on jewelry while you slowly bleed to death. And I had the impression that Mr. Xi was, you know, kind of the same way. Did you get that impression? Did you watch any of that? Did you watch any? But every little piece of video that was out there that had Mr. Xi Jinping in it gave me the impression that this guy is, the reason he was here is to kind of like, you know, taking a walk through the store before he decides to clean out the shelves and declare bankruptcy and make everyone unemployed. kind of like Mitt Romney used to do when he was with Bain Capital, right? Oh, my God. It's just not very much fun watching all this happen. Oh, and there were demonstrators in front of the White House while Mr. Xi was there, of Free Tibet. People demonstrating against... Now, this is going to sound very condescending and patronizing and demeaning, and I don't mean it that way. It's very cute, isn't it, to see how the Washington police, in some instances the park police, allow a certain number of demonstrators to voice their outrage at a foreign leader. And I say cute, not to be patronizing of the demonstrators, but in a very sick way. It's like, oh, look, here's a First Amendment zone. Look, kids, see, in America, you can stand there with your signs until 3 o'clock. Then you have to leave. Free speech zone closes at 3 o'clock. Hurry up, boys, get your signs up. Hey. Larry in Portland sent me an email. He says, Mike, I'm going to be voting in November for Barack Obama and holding my nose as I do. And here are three short reasons why I will be. Ben Bernanke, Larry Summers, and Timothy Geithner. To vote Republican this November would be like committing suicide for my family and me, and it's not an option at all. That being said, and assuming Obama is reelected in November, and I firmly believe he will be, do you think Joe Biden should stay and be the vice president for a second full four-year term? Or do you think Biden should bow out, say, midway through Obama's second term and then have Obama bring former Governor Howard Dean on as VP and set the table for a far more progressive Democratic presidential candidate in 2016? And if not Howard Dean, someone like Howard Dean. I really like Howard Dean a lot, and I'd love for you to have him on your show. Frankly, I don't see Joe Biden as being an electable presidential candidate. And by 2016, Biden will be even older. And let's remember, too, it was Joe Biden who was against Obama giving the order to go kill Osama bin Laden. And just recently, Joe Biden caved on the contraception coverage for women and was all for Obama making changes to satisfy the right-wing Berman. And probably because the Catholic Church told him to. Regards, Larry in Portland. Well, Larry, there's a lot in here. Let's do a break, Kathy. We'll come back, and I'll try to answer some of what you said.
Just had another cup of coffee. Here's Mike Malloy.
Past the hour. Okay, so Larry in Portland, he's going to be voting for Barack Obama in November. Okay, you know, I'm... I said before, you know my position on this, and I think people should try to fight the capitalist hordes any way they can. If you think voting for Obama is a way of fighting these capitalist predators who are devouring the country, then, you know, have at it. As far as Joe Biden is concerned, I don't know. Howard Dean, I don't think, would ever be invited onto the ticket. Look what the corporations did to him when he was winning primaries. When was it? 4 years ago? Well, at this point, yeah. Was it in the 08? Seems so long ago. Where one joyful yell from a very exuberant man was turned into something that tried to make him look insane. Corporate America, the capitalists, will never allow Howard Dean on any national ticket. It will not happen ever. So, as far as Biden, no, I think Biden will just ride the horse till it's, I mean, why should he quit? I mean, why should Obama ask him to resign and fill in with anybody? The 2016 race, but you know, who knows? Who knows, Larry? It could happen. But the 2016 race will probably be just an absolute, I don't know. I can't even guess. I don't even know if by 2016 we're still going to be able to vote in this country, as phony as that's become. You know, there's some really ugly stuff on the horizon. And, you know, we are 4 years away from that. So, I don't know. I don't know. As far as Biden caving, well, sure. Biden knows he's never going to succeed his boss and run for the presidency. Biden has a good gig, you know. Nothing against Joe Biden. I mean, of course, he was Clarence Thomas's big defender, if you'll remember. But I don't care. I really don't care. All those decisions will be made for us before we ever step into the voting booth. That is a given. Did you read Maureen Dowd today? She points out something we talked about earlier this week, or was it last week? And that is that exorcisms are back in fashion. Right? The Catholic Church is, I mean, it's really becoming this bizarro world. This anti-birth control insanity that it decided to get involved in, to divert attention from the fact that it has a collection of pedophiles that supersedes any collection of pedophiles anywhere. And they all wear robes and cassocks and they bugger little children and then they scream about birth control. That makes sense, doesn't it? But exorcism is back in fashion. According to Maureen, about 7 years ago, worried about the rise of the occult. I must have missed that. Rise of the occult? What the hell? Pope John Paul II asked Cardinal Ratzinger, who was at the time the head of the Vatican's Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith. Those were the people who conducted the Inquisition in the 12th, 13th, 14th centuries. And, of course, Cardinal Ratzinger went on to become Pope Benedict the 16th. Anyway, Pope Paul asked Ratzinger to direct bishops around the world to appoint and train exorcists in their dioceses. Well, you try saying it. What's the plural of diocese? Dioceses? Train and appoint exorcists. Now, in 2010, American bishops held a conference in Baltimore on this very topic. Father Gabriel Amorth, who's the exorcist for the Diocese of Rome. This is the guy that complained that yoga and Harry Potter are evil and demon-inspired and full of Satan. yoga and Harry Potter. He claims that Pope Benedict exorcised two possessed men who were howling and banging their heads on the ground by blessing them. You remember that. The Vatican said, nah, the Pope had no knowledge of this. But Father Amorth wrote that, quote, simply the presence of the Pope can soothe and in some way help the possessed in their fight against the one who possesses them. Blah! You know, the two men that were banging their heads on the pavement were probably two guys who just took a look inside the envelopes of their 401ks or the equivalent in Italy and just went nuts. More on this when we come back.
The devil bowed his head because he knew that he'd been beat. And he laid that golden fiddle on the ground at Johnny's feet. Johnny said, devil, just come on back if you ever want to try again. Because I told you once, you son of a gun, I'm the best there's ever been. He played, found a mountain, run, boy, run. Devil's in the house of the rising sun.
You are now entering a flying monkey free zone. It's Mike Malloy.
25. Before the hour. Jesus, what's loose in here? Man. This hour is being sponsored by Tim McCauley, who appreciates this program. Thanks, Tim. Exorcisms. They're making a comeback. Maureen Dowd wrote about it in her column, her op-ed column in the New York Times today. She said she recently visited Father Gary Thomas, the pastor of Sacred Heart Parish in Saratoga in Northern California, an exorcist who was the focus of a book by Matt Baglio called The Rite. R-I-T-E, that became a movie last year with Anthony Hopkins. The movie, the book, chronicled Father Thomas's demonology and exorcism training in Rome. Father Thomas thinks the time is ripe for exorcisms because, quote, our country is at war with itself culturally over whether or not it believes in God. And because there is a growing amount of paganism, New Age practices like crystals, Reiki, witchcraft, black magic, tarot cards, Ouija boards, seances. What? What? New Age. New Age. New Age. These people want to stay in the old age, back when disease and sickness was caused by demons. He said he knows of 52 exorcising priests in America. And then Maureen goes on. She says, sitting in his office holding a red book titled De Exorcismis et Supplicationibus Quibustum. In English, of exorcisms and certain supplications. Holding that book, he conceded that despite 75 exorcisms on 8 people, 75 on 8? That's about 10 per person? Damn. He said that his success has been limited. He explained that what he calls soul wounds, like sexual abuse, pornography, and sexual addiction, can serve as doorways to demonic attachment and possession. He said demons are always looking for people who have broken relationships or no relationships. That's why sexual abuse mixed with the occult is the perfect cocktail. Demons don't have corporeal bodies like we do. They can travel faster, far more intelligent, and have a much keener sense of free will. What? Well, if that's the case, Father Gary, then the Catholic Church is the source of possessions. I mean, you just said it yourself. Soul wounds, like sexual abuse, serve as doorways for the demons to rush in! Can you believe we're talking about this in the 21st century? Demon possession. Oh, look at my head snapping back and forth. Oh, my God. Now, Father Gary says he's not frightened of meeting a violent end like Father Karras in The Exorcist or Father Marin. He says, I'm protected. I go to confession before an exorcism. Really? He says that he does, however, think that Satan has tried to tempt him with lustful urges. He says, I would be in my car and have this visual rush, and I'm like, where the hell did that come from? What are the lustful urges, do you suppose? Toward the little boys who serve at the altar in the Catholic Church? Is that what you're talking about, Father Gary? Lustful urges. Altar boys. Oh, he has such a cute little butt.
I bet they're not really demon possessions. I bet you anything that it's just that these pastors have never seen anybody with a Bluetooth device. First time I walked through a grocery store and saw everybody muttering to themselves and having conversations and arguments, I thought, you know, the entire community had gone completely insane until I realized they had these little things sticking out of their ears, which I can't look at without thinking, hey, you enjoy that tumor. But, you know, wouldn't you think maybe it's not an uptick in demon possessions, it's just an uptick in Bluetooth devices.
Or an uptick in the insanity of the Catholic Church. That's what I attribute it to. These people are going goddamn insane. I mean, it's a mass psychosis here. You know, when you have New Age stuff like, you know, yoga. Woo! That's not New Age, you dumbasses. Yoga is about 10,000 years older than the Catholic Church. Okay, I'm exaggerating, but it's damn sure older than the Catholic Church. New Age? On burning incense. Wait a minute, not burning incense. The church does that. And they never have any good smelling incense. Every time I've been in a church that burns incense, I don't know, it smells like socks or dirty hassocks or something. I don't know. But New Age stuff, what is New Age stuff? The CDs you buy now with New Age music? Ooh, those are devils talking. So Enya is a demon, right? Enya? With she's New Age, the most popular New Age artist in musical artist in Ireland for what, 10 years in a row, and of course the Irish finally got wise and broke off diplomatic relations with the Vatican after what is going on in Ireland. That you talk about an iceberg, the tip of which has only been discovered. The Catholic Church, with its representatives in Ireland, there's a good chance that they buggered every second or third child born in the past 200 years in that poor, godforsaken country. Until finally, the prime minister said, that's enough. It's a wonder he didn't, St. Patrick is alleged to have done, drove all the snakes out of the Emerald Isle. Why not drive all the Catholic priests out of the Emerald Isle and watch the incidences of child rape diminish to almost zero? Oh, and let me backtrack a second regarding Howard Dean. As Reg writes, Howard Dean was dead in the water the minute he suggested an even-handed approach to the Israel-Palestinian conflict. Never, ever, ever will he be allowed on any ticket. Yeah, that's true. That's true. How can it be that one of the wealthiest organizations in the history of the human race, the Catholic Church, that alleges to have been built on the foundation of Peter, who allegedly was a follower of Jesus. And Jesus, of course, was this if he existed at all, and I'm going to go on the assumption that he did. He was a rabbi, and he lived 2,000 years ago. But here was this guy whose homilies, if you will, were fairly simple. You know, don't beat people up and expect them to say, I love you, which pretty much was the foundation of Christianity. And look what the Catholic Church has done over the past 2,000 years. I mean, it's just beyond belief. Oh, well, you know my position on all this crapola. Oh, yeah, and this also was, I got via TVNewsLies.org this morning. It's from the blog at the LA Times. The Mormons now have apologized for baptizing the parents of Simon Wiesenthal, the famed Nazi hunter. On Monday, an official with the church apologized. The uproar began last week when it was discovered that a member of the Mormon church had submitted for posthumous baptism the names of Wiesenthal's parents, and that the couple, Asher and Rosa Wiesenthal, were baptized by proxy last month. Simon Wiesenthal, who died in 2005, was a Jewish rights advocate and a survivor of the Holocaust. He spent decades hunting down Nazis and bringing them to justice. The Mormon church member who is not being identified by the Mormon church used a genealogical database to submit the names for proxy baptism. The Wiesenthal Center's associate dean, Abraham Cooper, said in a statement, quote, we are outraged that such insensitive actions continue in the Mormon temples, end quote. Throughout his life, Simon Wiesenthal especially revered his beloved mother, who was deported and murdered at Belzec death camp in 1942. Such actions make a mockery of the many meetings with the top leadership of the Mormon Church dating back to 1995, end quote. Religion is not the opiate of the masses. It is the rubber room. It is the psycho ward of the masses.
Progressive talk. It's Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour. This hour has been sponsored by Tim McCauley. Thanks, Tim. Thank you very much. And stick around for the third hour after this next break, because we're going to do more church. But also, I have to tell you about a guy who's stalking me. Yeah, I've got a cyber stalker. And, I mean, I've had this happen before, and it's okay. Oops, no problem. But, I'm pretty sure I know why he's stalking me. Not that there's anything wrong with it, but I'll tell you about it next hour. In 1995, Mormon church officials and Jewish groups struck an agreement to remove the names of several hundred thousand Holocaust victims from the Mormons' genealogical database. I mean, that takes a lot of balls, doesn't it? I mean, here you are, a member of a cult, which is what Mormonism is, you know. If you read the Book of Mormon, which I have, years ago, I was about 18, and I was at my girlfriend's house, and knock on the door, and went to the door, and there they stood, Elder Beardall. I'll never forget his name, Elder Beardall, and the other one was Elder, I forget. But it was Elder Beardall who did most of the talking, and there they stood. And they were just so white. It was like angels standing there, these two guys. And they had on dark suits and ties and white shirts and alabaster skin. And they were just, I don't know, there was a cuteness about them. And my girlfriend's mom came to the door and said, may I help you? And, well, she didn't talk like that, but she said, may I help you? And they said they had a story to tell us. Well, what the hell? So my girlfriend's mom invited them in. Next thing you know, they'd set up one of those easels that you used to have in Sunday school with the what's that clingy cloth that you put up? What's that called, Kathy? Felt. Oh, okay. You say that so condescendingly. But anyway, they got this easel out, and they brought out little felt characters, and they started explaining the Book of Mormon. And I was just fascinated. This is back at the time when I was still an unrecovered Methodist. I was still, you know, I was president of our church's youth fellowship group. I sang in the choir. And that's, I swear that's the truth. Even, there's more stories there. But anyway, we watched as these two Mormon elders, young boys, I don't know, 17, 18, 19, what's his name, did in France. Mitt Romney spent his 2 years on the road in France. That must have been fun. And they laid out this whole story, and I'm sitting there going, wow, man, you mean one of the lost tribes of Israel wound up here, if I'm remembering it right? And this angel or somebody buried these gold tablets somewhere in Pennsylvania, I guess. Yeah, Rick Santorum's home state. And then one day the angel Moroni appeared to Joseph Smith and said, dig over there. And he did, and he comes up with these gold plates that told the whole story, you know. So I'm listening to these two elders, and I'm just, and my girlfriend at the time was very Catholic. Oh my God, was she Catholic? And her mother was Catholic too. And so I'm sitting there, and you know, my girlfriend had to get a dispensation just to be dating me. So we're sitting there listening, a Catholic and an older Catholic and me about to collapse Methodist, listening to this story. And of course, I'm sitting there going, hey, this is really cool. I really am interested in this. So they gave me the Book of Mormon. And I took it home and started reading it. And after about the first two or three chapters, I started to giggle and laugh. And I realized, oh my God, this is a joke. These people, this is a joke. Only it wasn't. But I kept reading, and I thought, man, who comes up with this? Well, if anyone were to ever ask me, which no one has and no one gives a damn, but if there was anything that tipped me really onto the path of total blinding, frothing, foaming at the mouth atheism, it was reading the Book of Mormon. I mean, that... The Jewish Christian Bible, it was weird enough, especially when you realize that you know, when was it Lot and his wife Sarah who fled from Sodom and everybody's wiped out, and that night the two daughters said, you know, everybody's been wiped out, let's go have sex with Dad so we can get pregnant. And so, in turns, they did that. And then, of course, this set up down through the genealogy, the house of David, which was what Jesus was from. So it's all based on incest? Are you kidding me? Now, I haven't read the Holy Quran because it's too, I don't know, it's just too strange. It's kind of like reading, what's his name? Who is the Persian poet? Not Omar Khayyam, but you know who I mean, the Persian poet. It's like reading, I don't know. I just can't get into the Quran. The Bible, piece of cake. The Book of Mormon, hysterically funny. But I can't. They didn't tell me at the time that they would baptize dead people, that they would desecrate somebody else's religion by reaching, I don't know, what, a spiritual hand into the way beyond and yanking a person back, and so to speak, and baptizing them. Well, is that kidnapping or something like that? We'll be back after the break. Stick around. It's going to be intense. I'll tell you about my stalker who wants me. Seven past the hour, and as promised, church night on the Molloy program. If you are unfamiliar with what church night is on the Molloy program, it's just all kinds of stuff that's sick and twisted. The influence, or the attempted influence, or the actual influence of religious fanatics on our political slash economic system, to the point where religion is being debased by these people. Totally debased. While I'm a non-believer in any of this stuff, I know that there are people who do have a belief system in supernatural beings and miracles and so on and so forth. And what the Republicans, what the hard right is doing, is taking that belief, that form of spiritual acknowledgement, and trashing it for their own political ends. I think this is what the Ten or one of the commandments meant when they said not to take the Lord thy God's name in vain. You know what I'm saying? So, the reason I do church night on Wednesdays is because traditionally it's prayer meeting night. If you grew up in certain evangelical brands of the Catholic, of the Protestant church, as I did. But only on a temporary basis. It's not that I went to prayer meeting every Wednesday night of my life. No, no, no. Only in the summers when I stayed with my grandmother and grandfather and uncles and aunts and so on and so forth. They should have been Catholic because they were Italian immigrants, but there were too many Catholics doing too many bad things back then in the United States. Everybody from Sacco and Vanzetti to Giuseppe Zangara. So they had to assimilate as quickly as they could, and so they did. They gave up whatever ties they had to Catholicism, and I don't think they had that many anyway, but they gave them up and became good old Baptists, part of the Southern Baptist Convention Church in Northwest Ohio, which is where they lived. Okay, you got it? Okay, good. So on Wednesday nights was prayer meeting, and my grandparents used to take me, and it was very weird to see people who spoke fairly broken English, really, praying for the health of President Truman, and that the Korean War would soon end, and that godless communism would be defeated, and you know, blah, 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 blah. It stuck with me. Those images. So we do prayer, we do church night in recognition of all those years ago of prayer meetings on Wednesday night. A lot of people still go to prayer meeting on Wednesday night. There are a lot of semi-rural churches around the Molloy compound, and they do pretty
good business on Wednesday nights. We were thinking about setting up a Girl Scout cookie stand out in front of, and just saying that if you buy these cookies, it'll hurry up the return of the Savior. But then we thought, no, probably not a good idea. One last thing before I take off on church night, though. This is February 15th, and on this date in 1933, Franklin Delano Roosevelt had just sat down after giving a speech at the Bayfront Park in Miami when five shots rang out. There was an attempt, this is not talked about that much in American history, attempt to assassinate Roosevelt. An Italian immigrant and unemployed bricklayer named Giuseppe Zangara emptied his .32 caliber pistol while aiming the best he could at FDR while standing on a chair about 25 feet away. None of the shots hit Roosevelt, but Chicago's Mayor Anton Cermak was hit in the stomach and died a couple of days later. Four others received minor injuries from Giuseppe's gunfire. In an interview with officials after the shooting, Zangara stated that he wanted to kill FDR because he blamed FDR and all rich people and capitalists for his chronic stomach pain. Oops. The mayor of Chicago, Anton Cermak, died of his wounds. About 3 weeks later, Zangara was charged with first-degree murder. He pled guilty to the charge, was sentenced to death, and on March 20th, now remember, the assassination attempt took place on the 15th of February. Cermak died on the 6th of March, and on the 20th of March, Zangara died in the electric chair. Swift justice. So that's one of the reasons my grandparents had previously made sure that even though they had an Italian name, they would try to break their ties with Italian immigrants, which they were. I can certainly understand that. According to the Religious News Service, dozens of members of Congress are upset, I tell you, that the Air Force, probably the most Christianized branch of the U.S. military, the Air Force has removed the Latin word for God from the logo of an Air Force acquisitions office. Yeah. Now, the guy stirring this pot is some freak named J. Randy Forbes. He's a Republican from Virginia. He is co-chair of the Congressional Prayer Caucus. Congressional Prayer Caucus. And Monday, a week ago, 36 lawmakers sent a letter to the Secretary of the Air Force, Michael Donnelly, and the Air Force Chief of Staff, General Norton Schwartz. And these lawmakers, these Congressional Prayer Caucus members, amen, objected to the removal of God from the logo of the Air Force Rapid Capabilities Office. The RCO, that's a acquisitions office. Now, the logo was removed, according to J. Randy Forbes, Virginia Republican, after objections by the Military Association of Atheists and Freethinkers. Uh-oh, there's those damn atheists again. Oh, look at them. They're trying to take over the country, those atheists. They're trying to jam their beliefs down our throats. Jason Torpy, who's president of the Military Association of Atheists and Freethinkers, said the word God had no place in the logo because not all members of the military are religious. Torpy said, quote, "We just hope the Air Force can provide more equal opportunities for atheists and humanists in the military," end quote. You know. The congressional letter from these right-wing freaks, these Republicans, says, quote, "The action taken by the RCO suggests that all references to God, regardless of their context, must be removed from the military. We ask that you reverse this perplexing decision," end quote. Now,
What was the Latin motto? Opus Dei cum pecunia alienum et decimus, which means doing God's work with other people's money. That was the motto. And it was an inside joke to the RCO, the Rapid Capabilities Office. I mean, they made a joke, doing God's work with other people's money. So it was changed to miraculi cum pecunia alienum et decimus, which simply means doing miracles with other people's money. They changed the word God to the word miracles. That's all they did. Now, the letter from the right-wing Republicans, but I repeat myself, argues that, quote, courts consistently have upheld the constitutionality of our national motto, In God We Trust, despite the obvious mention of God. So they want the Latin motto put back. A representative for the Air Force could not be reached for comment.
Whether your dreams are scary at hand, God on your side. So now as I'm leaving, I'm a weary as hell. The confusion I'm feeling, and your tongue can tell. The words in my head, they fall to the floor.
Redefining anger management. Back to Mike Malloy.
Wow, 21 past the hour. This hour is being sponsored. As a matter of fact, as you know, the entire program tonight has been sponsored. I want to mention again, by Tim McCauley. And his message, of course, I want to sponsor the night. I have nothing profound to say. I'm a dedicated listener. I love the show. You guys have made a major impact in the formation of my political and religious views. I can't thank you enough. I hope the sponsorship helps you keep it lit. We need you to be on the air for a long time. Thanks for all that you do. Tim. Tim, that's very, very kind. Again, thank you. And we just appreciate that. Thank you very much. So, no more Opus Dei cum pecunia alienum epicemus. Doing God's work with other people's money. God, it takes me back to high school Latin. And instead, it will now be miraculi cum pecunia alienum epicemus. Doing miracles with other people's money. Until Representative J. Randy Forbes and the other 35 lawmakers who sent this letter to Air Force Secretary Michael Donnelly and Air Force Chief of Staff General Norton Schwartz get their way, as probably they will. God and religion has become a very hot commodity to right-wingers. None of them, not one of them, lives the life laid out by Jesus Christ. Not a single one. I defy you to show me a member of a political party who professes to be a hardcore, if that's the proper way to put it, Christian, who actually lives the life of Christ, of Jesus, the one they consider to be God's own son, the Messiah. There he is, ladies and gentlemen. They don't. And this is what burns my ass and eventually will burn theirs in their own constructed hell, is this unbelievable hypocrisy that is never ending. It's like a fountain of poisonous water that just gushes out of some toxic desert and just keep, you can't drink it. It can't sustain anything. Nothing grows in it, but it gushes. And that's what this kind of Christianity is about. It's sickening. It's disgusting. I wish my grandmother were alive because she would take one of those lilac bush switches and go up to Washington and beat the living hell out of some of these people. I'll tell you right now, she would. She'd get a hold of these self-professing blabbermouth Christians and strip the skin off their butts. Left-wing talk show host advocates beating right-wing members of Congress with wood. You sick bastards. With a bush, right? Oh, God. Yeah?
I have to just say, still, my personal favorite has to be liberal talk show host suggests drowning neocons in a vat of turkey gravy.
Right. Yeah, there's a right-wing website. The guy who runs it obviously has the hots for me.
He must just love you.
He must. I've had this experience before. I really have, and it's no big deal. I've had it in the real world, and I've had it in the wonderful world of radio. There is a difference. You know, where you have somebody, man or woman, who develops a crush based on nothing other than what they hear on the radio. It's really ridiculous. It really is. But it's understandable. I do the same. I develop crushes. I think the only man crush I've had was on Robert Redford, and that's so old. It goes all the way back to the movie The Way We Were. You know,
not Prince?
I just wanted to get in that movie and kiss him. He was just so pretty, wasn't he? He was. But I get this every once in a while, and my latest man crusher is some guy who runs a right-wing website, who if I say, I can put two sentences together, and he will seize on it, if it has even the slightest odor of anti-right-wing stuff, he'll seize on it and make his big article about it. And obviously, he wants to have sex with me. And I need to tell you, fella, I'm not interested. I really am not. Been there, done that. You know, I prefer women. Or a woman. Sorry, Kathy. But I just no, okay? Absolutely no. So if this guy would just back off, you know who you are, I'm not going to go to bed with you, no matter what you try to do. I am not going to have any kind of sexual activity with you. So stop. It's just becoming embarrassing the way this guy writes about me. Now, he tries to cover up by writing, you know, nasty stuff and making it sound like I'm some kind of a freak. But please, you're just becoming too obvious. Subtlety is fine. I mean, if you want to be subtle about it, you know, slip me little emails and stuff like that, that's all right. I can handle that. But these full frontal nudity attacks that you come up with, you are so obvious, dude. I mean, it's too obvious. And again, I really am not interested. Not that there's anything wrong with it. I just, like I said, I had my little experiences when I was younger and just decided to go the route I've gone. Clear? Thank you.
Business.
You're listening to Mike Malloy. Turn down your speakers. It'll be our secret.
25 before the hour. This hour is being sponsored by Tim McCauley. He says, I have nothing profound to say. I'm a dedicated listener. I love the show. You guys have made a major impact in the formation of my political and religious views. Can't thank you enough. I hope the sponsorship helps you keep it lit. We need you to be successful and on the air for a long time. Thanks for all that you do. Tim. Thank you, Tim. Yeah, so I hope the guy at the right wing website will just ease up a little bit, because you ain't getting none. I can just tell you that right now. Andrew Rosenthal, who is part of the New York Times family, has a blog site. And he had a piece yesterday which I thought really tied into what we've been talking about on this program. Rosenthal talks about the fact that at the start of his administration, President Obama missed the Republican leadership pledging to oppose everything he wanted to do in order to destroy him. I mean, remember, that was made very clear. Wasn't it Mitch McConnell? He said, our main objective is to make this a one-term president. They set out to destroy this man. I've never seen anything like this ever. The Democrats didn't do this to Bush. Nobody did it to Reagan. The Democrats or the Republicans tried it on Clinton, but it was more of a personal attack rather than legislative. They can't get their teeth around anything where it concerns Obama's personal life. So to utterly and absolutely destroy him, that has been their only goal. Now, this helps explain why the Congress is looked at with 10% approval in this country. What a bunch of scum-sucking bastards. I mean, they really, really are. It's one thing to defeat somebody with ideas better than the ones they're promoting. Now, I realize that sounds very archaic and like, what? Better ideas? But what these bastards, these Republicans are doing and have been doing for the past 3 years is trying to literally destroy a presidency, and in the process, this is the part that pisses me off, destroy the country. They don't care about this country. These Republicans are not loyal. They're not loyal at all. And they're goddamn sure not Christian. They're a bunch of swine. It's just horrible. But Rosenthal points out, Obama kept acting as though he had someone to negotiate with for the past 3 years. And this is where I started to lose it with Obama. I mean, wake up and smell the vitriol, Mr. President. These people want to destroy you. Why are you making nice with them? Oh, well. So, the point of Rosenthal's blog, last week the Catholic Church's lobbying operation and a bunch of these filthy Republicans sent the White House a very clear signal. To wit, they plan to turn this nonsense over contraceptives into something much bigger. It would be an all-out assault on health care reform, a campaign wedge issue, a chance to expand religious influence, and part of the attack on a woman's right to control their own bodies and to exist within a sphere of privacy when they chose to. And yet, as Rosenthal writes, Obama backed down. Instead of sticking by his initial plan, mandating that all religiously affiliated organizations provide insurance coverage for birth control, he caved. He carved out a special accommodation for the Catholic Church and all their exorcists. He announced last Friday that, quote, if a woman's employer is a charity or a hospital that has a religious objection to providing contraceptive services as part of their health plan, the insurance company, not the hospital, not the charity, the insurance company will be required to reach out and offer the woman contraceptive care free of charge, end quote. Now, you don't have to be an insurance executive or a rocket scientist or even a competent talk show host to realize this was a mistake. For a lot of reasons, including that it leaves Barack Obama open to exactly the sort of attack that the Republicans immediately waged. Rosenthal points out, as soon as Obama extended this olive branch, the Republicans introduced legislation that would strip coverage of birth control out of the health care reform law entirely. Tell me that's not anti-woman. Tell me that's not satanic. Tell me these right-wing freaks hate women. They're like this guy who writes about me all the time. He wants me, but he can't face up to it. He can't face his inner queer. He can't look in the mirror and say, oh, okay, that's what I want. These people hate women so much, they will do anything to cover up the fact that they really love men. What is the matter with you people? There's nothing wrong with it! Except what you've done to the idea of same-sex love or attraction or affection or sex. It's what you've done, you rat bastards. But anyway, strip coverage of birth control out of healthcare reform law entirely. That's their goal now. House Speaker John Boehner signed onto the idea immediately. As soon as they sobered him,
what time is this? 5 o'clock somewhere? I need some wine. What? Now what are we doing? What are we attacking now? The birth control thing. Yeah, well, I don't know anything about that. Give me a drink and get me over to the house and, you know, whatever.
And Mitch McConnell said on Sunday, that he would support a measure that would permit any group with a moral objection to birth control, any group to refuse to pay for insurance that covers it. That's any group. Forget the religiously affiliated hospitals and universities. Any group. Because Mitch McConnell, he's another one. You know, his wife, Elaine Chao, is obviously a beard. Mitch, why don't you just come out with it? You'll feel much better, pal. Trust me. Now, I know I'm going to get emails now from gay men saying, boy, we don't want these thugs. I understand. Now, the right wing telegraphed this. A week ago, Anthony Picarello. I mentioned him. Remember we talked about Picarello? I love that name. I love Italian names. To me, are like German names. They're just so melodic. Huh? Anthony Picarello, the lawyer for the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops, says his taxpayer subsidized group, wanted anyone. And remember what he cited, a Taco Bell owner? He wanted anyone to be able to refuse to pay for birth control insurance. So he says that, and within moments, they sober up Boehner, and he's wandering over to the, where am I supposed to go? Okay, wait. And McConnell, oh yeah, this is assault on religious liberty. You know, McConnell, who is to religious liberty what a rabid dog is to a house pet. But there he is. Stop the federal government from regulating the church of the Taco Bell manager. Right? Of course. I don't think Taco Bell is a religious organization, do you? No, of course not. But you see, you give these rat bastards an inch, and they'll take the whole cross. They'll take it all! McConnell said on Meet the Press Sunday that the fight was over freedom of religion. And that Obama, quote, is rigid in his view that he gets to decide what somebody else's religion is, end quote. Can you believe that? Does McConnell believe that? No! Obama is not trying to decide your religion. Oh, my God, look what they have done. Look what these sick sons of bitches, and you wonder why I rail about this every night? This nexus of religious insanity and right-wing political fascist insanity and how neatly it fits together and overarching all of it is this putrid, destructive capitalism. What a combination. This is what is destroying not just America, not just the family, not just our natural resources, not just foreign relations. This is what's destroying the entire planet. Everything. And the subtext of all this is, of course, Mike, it has to be destroyed so our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christus, will return. Man. Obama hasn't said anything remotely like he wants to decide what somebody else's religion is. It's the right-wing Republican conservative Nazis who are saying that, right?
We're not going to have Sharia law here, no, but Psst, we're going to have Christian law. Give me the book of Leviticus. I won't beat the hell out of somebody. Give me the book of Leviticus. Here, you got a smart-ass kid, take him in the backyard and kill him. That's what the book says. Just kill him. You know, just cut his eyes out, his hands off, and watch him bleed to death. Well, that'll show the rest of your little spawn, won't it? This is exhausting. We'll be right back. Before the hour, this hour has been sponsored, as the whole night has, by Tim McCauley. Thanks, Tim. Tim's message, I have nothing profound to say. I'm a dedicated listener. I love the show. You guys have made a major impact in the formation of my political and religious views. That's pretty profound. I can't thank you enough. I hope the sponsorship helps you keep it lit. It does, Tim. We need you to be successful and on the air for the long time. Thanks for all for a long time. Thanks for all that you do, Tim. Thank you, Tim. We appreciate it very much. Really appreciate it very much. So, back once again to the little blog piece that Andrew Rosenthal, New York Times, wrote, just pointing out what you and I have been talking about for so long on this program, for 3 years, actually. I mean, come on. Obama thinking that these rapacious, insane, capitalists bought and paid for, religious right, political fascist cretins that now make up the Republican Party and a good chunk of the Democratic Party, that they're going to negotiate with him, Obama, in good faith, in any faith? No. There is a very solid rule with the Republicans. Ain't going to be no black president. Ain't going to be no black president. You know, they spent 130 years trying to shake the curse of Abraham Lincoln. Ain't going to be no black president, at least not for two terms. Well, I hate to give you cockroaches a newsflash, but whether you like it or not, whether anybody likes it or not, yes, there will be. Yes. Obama will be reelected, possibly by a bigger majority than put him in office to begin with, and he will be taking with him lots and lots of representatives and senators. No, I don't make predictions. This is not a prediction. This is an almost observable fact. But anyway, the attack on him when he backed down, and he did, when he said, okay, if a woman's employer is a charity or a hospital, okay. You don't have to provide contraceptive services. The insurance company will have to provide it. Actually, that was kind of a snookery move, but didn't work. Because once you did that, Mr. President, then these rats in the Republican Christian Party saw their opportunity and took it, as rats will. I mean, come on. You lay a piece of dead flesh out where there's rats, shoom!
And as Rosenthal points out, obviously, the First Amendment does, of course, guarantee the free exercise of religion, but the courts have made clear that citizens can't refuse to obey an otherwise neutral law because of their religious views. And the birth control provision does not infringe upon anyone's freedom to worship. It doesn't force anyone to use birth control. It just compels institutions to make it available. This is where the Christians always show how weak, how ineffectual they are, how useless is their phony-ass bloody religion, because it has to be coerced if the birth control is available. Good Christian women wouldn't use it if the church had the kind of death hold on them that the church likes to think it has. What is the figure being batted around? Was it the Guttmacher Institute? I don't know. Somebody, 98% of Catholic women use birth control. What does that say about the Catholic Church, at least where it concerns birth control, that it might as well not exist? Now, do you think these women sit around, do they go to their priests and confess a mortal sin? Or do they just say, oh, please stop, and go about lighting their candles and doing their Hail Marys and they're praying the rosary and so on and so forth? I mean, well, come on. But all religion at its bottom is coercive. It is a forced institution. Believe this way or die. Now, the Catholic Church, of course, made that its absolute coda. In this world and the next, believe this way or die. Dig up a bunch of dead Jews and Muslims and Wiccans and all sorts of people from the Dark Ages, the Middle Ages, the Renaissance, and ask them, how did you die? Well, the church murdered me. The Catholic Church, as all religions, are at bottom coercive. And the average human being, the average, not all, the average human being has to be inculcated with this crap from an early age. You know, I have a 7-year-old who comes home occasionally and tells me about kids in her school, maybe, that she chats with on the playground during recess. Yes, they have recess. Who say they're getting baptized next Sunday. And Molly will say, what is that? And they'll tell her, and she'll say, why? And these other little kids will say, so I don't go to hell. O-M-F-G. So I don't go to hell. 7 years old. Well, I certainly hope you enjoyed this last hour of church night. It certainly was an enlightenment for me, huh? Thanks again to Tim McCauley. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.